Are we live? Okay, good morning, Wyoming. Welcome to the Legislative Joint Appropriations Committee Supplemental Budget Meeting. Don, please call the roll.
Senator Dockstetter.
Excused.
Senator Hastert.
Here.
Senator Meyer.
Excused.
Senator Perkins.
Here.
Representative Blickery.
Here.
Representative Burkhart.
Here.
Representative Escobel.
Here.
Representative Moniz.
Here.
Representative Nicholas. Representative Stubson,
here.
Co-Chairman Harshman, Chairman Bebout.
Here.
We have a quorum.
We do have a quorum. We also have with us today members of the incoming Joint Appropriations Committee. We have Senators Wasserberger and Burns here that are coming in, and also Mr. President Tony Ross. And from the House side, Steve, do you introduce your members?
Sure. We have Mike Greer and Kathy Conley are two new members.
Okay, thank you. Do we have some minutes, Don, to approve?
Mr. Chairman, the minutes of the November 17th meeting should be right on your desk. They were passed out this morning. This was the meeting held in Casper to address retirement issues, Wyoming Public Television, and economic development, investment of state funds in equities.
Okay, do I have a motion on the minutes?
So moved.
Do I have a second? Okay, discussion. Any corrections? Committee, any corrections of the minutes? Okay.
Approved.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Minutes have been approved. Okay, Don, we'll be waiting for the governor. He's going to show up here in a little bit. Why don't you just give us a quick overview of the CREG that we did in October and then sort of a little update of where we are. If you would please come on up here for the committee while we're waiting for the governor, just because this is all about money and spending and revenues and priorities. That's what this committee does, and so we need to have just a little quick overview of where we are. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, with respect to the consensus revenue estimating group, in the October CREG report and the associated profile from October, the amount of current funds in the general fund and the budget reserve account is a negative $4.42 million. That does not mean that the state does not have funds available. It does mean that the funds are not available in the current accounts, the traditional funds of the general fund and the budget reserve account. With respect to immediately available funds, there is $21.4 million in the SIPA account, which is the Strategic Investments Projects account. This account is used to sweep excess investment earnings above the CREG estimate, and those did come in as expected, so this is available cash on the table.
Don, is that part of when the governor's veto, the way that all set up during from the last budget session, was that part of that, or is that separate?
Mr. Chairman, he did veto some language related to the SIPA, but a total of $45 million flowed into the SIPA. $25 million of that was redistributed to an economic development account, and the remaining $20 million plus the carryover from last year is what resides in the account currently.
And that $25 million was for the amendment for economic development to go through the business council and the state treasurer. Deals with Park County, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay, continue.
In addition, the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund Spending Policy Reserve Account, that's often called the SPRAW account, also called the PMTF-RA, has $190 million available in it. That is cash money. However, there is an obligation against those funds for a potential loan for the construction of the Capitol Complex, Hirschler Building, and Capitol. Once that loan is removed, there is roughly $70 million of unobligated, unexpended funds in that account.
Senator Perkins.
Spillover.
Mr. Chairman, this is all after the spillover. So this is, again, cash in hand. It is not an estimated amount. It is all cash on the table.
Okay, continue.
Mr. Chairman, there is also just shy of $2 billion in the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account projected to be in the balance. technically speaking, there was a $380 million, $384 million, I believe, transfer from the budget reserve account to the LSRA at the end of this biennium, June 30th, 2014. However, due to cash needs of the state auditor has elected to make that transfer in four quarterly installments of $92 million each. $92 million has, in fact, transferred as of October 31st. We fully expect the second payment of $92 million to be transferred to the LSRA on December 31st, 2014, about 20 days from now.
And that will be reflected in the Craig report we get in January, correct?
We will include a separate line item on the profile indicating what has and has not transferred.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Does the balance of the LSRA reflects that sweep already? Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Harshman, that's correct.
Full 360 or 380 or whatever, 380.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. That means when you come back here, the funds, $184 million, will not yet have been swept. Of course, money is fungible. The $384 million really comes from three primary sources, the first of which is $140 million of reversions. Last year's reversions were exceptionally high, largely due to Senate File 70 from 2004, which was a management audit-sponsored piece of legislation that directed all agencies and the State Auditor's Office to clean up unexpended appropriations from prior years. They essentially went back and cleaned up a decade's worth of old appropriations that were never expended for the purposes intended. That's why we have such a large amount of reversions this year, totaling $140 million. The balance of that 368, aside from the 140, comes from two other sources. Number one, primarily, is the Craig estimate was low last year. We had colder winter than expected and higher natural gas prices. As a result, we ended up with revenue in excess of the Craig forecast, particularly with respect to natural gas. Secondly, we had a portion of the capital gains that is below the spending policy amount and above the Craig estimate, meaning investment earnings that Craig projects only include interest and dividends. And there is a portion of the funds that is below 5% spending policy amount and above the Craig estimate, and that would be reflected as a portion of the 368 as well. I would also mention as a note of caution that Craig will meet again on January 6th. We will provide a new report for this committee for its final markup in January. Right now, as of the most recent monthly report, our revenues are tracking very close to expenditures. In fact, our revenues are slightly exceeding Craig's estimate. However, that's only the first 3 months. That has not experienced the significant drop in oil prices that the state and other oil producers have experienced to date.
Yeah, the good news, though, that it was down to 56, and I think it rebounded a little bit this morning early. So it's a little bit better. Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, our estimate on oil price for the next biennium, the next couple of years, is $85 per barrel. Wyoming oil. Wyoming oil sells for roughly 10 to 13 to 14, in some cases, dollars different than the WTI price that is posted on most financial pages. That's the Wyoming, West Texas, not Wyoming.
Yeah, the difference is negative difference.
Negative difference, yes, Mr. Chairman.
Just a second. Senator Perkins.
So what we've got, we're not quite 50% of what Craig estimate was with respect to price. Where do you have any feeling, or what are you seeing with respect to your estimated production?
Mr. Chairman, to date, our estimated projection is pretty dramatically positive, about 14 to 15% year-over-year increases. We have not yet experienced a downturn in production. That will certainly be a topic of Craig discussion because there is certainly substantially less incentive for producers to continue to ramp up their drilling at the same rate they did over the past 12 months. Going forward, Craig currently projects a 6% increase in production in calendar year 2015. Whether that 6% can be realized in this current pricing environment is certainly going to be a topic of January, Craig.
One of the things we've talked about a little bit, members of the committee, is excuse me, we might have before the session begins somebody to come in and talk to us a little bit about the price to produce a barrel of oil with the new technology and drilling. And, you know, you talk about a break-even point, and with the Bakken crude, somebody say some of the areas are like $80 a barrel to break even, some are more like $45. We need to get an idea what that is in Wyoming in terms of where did that price really disincentivize drilling, and where are they on negative cash flow and some of those kind of things. So, Mr. Co-Chair and soon-to-be Mr. Chairman, that's one of the things we talked about doing is to maybe before the session begins have a couple people come in and share that perspective with the legislature. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I would toss out a number or two with respect to the impact of oil price on the state. For every $5 drop in oil price, so from 85 to 80, from 80 to 75, from 75 to 70, the state loses approximately...
Let's don't talk about losses when the governor walks in. Morning, Governor.
Morning.
For you, anytime's right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Governor. Good to see you on a bright Monday morning. We both got our blue ties on. What I'd like to do, Governor, if it's okay with you, is I was going to allow Mr. Co-Chair an opportunity to make some comments, and then for the President of the Senate, soon to be Chairman of the JAC, Senator Ross, to make some. Then I have a couple things, and we'll turn the floor to you. Will that work?
Perfect.
Thank you, Governor. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Governor, and appreciate your recommendations, and gives us a great starting point. And I'm sure we'll have some differences, but we appreciate some, you know, very well thought out and some, you know, really diverse recommendations that continue to try to grow the state. A lot of focus on one-time projects in your budget, and you know, I just tell you that we'll do our due diligence and we're going to work and through this group committee process. Probably won't agree with you 100%, but we'll come up with a good budget. And so we appreciate.
So that's a first.
We appreciate your starting point, though. We really do appreciate the work that you and all your agencies have put into it. So, again, we're really glad to have you back in front of this committee and welcome this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Governor. Mr. President, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Just briefly.
Get into a mic.
Just wanted to thank you, Governor, for the past 2 years and serving with you as President of the Senate. I look forward to working with you and your staff as Senate Appropriations Chairman as we go forward. We are we're in a situation now where we feel like you presented a well thought out. Proposals. The question now becomes how do we try to implement those? And we will work with you to the best of our ability, at least. So I just thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for committee chairman for allowing us to be here today and allowing me to make a couple of comments.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Governor, just a couple of comments that I'd like to make as well as. Senator Wasserberger, Senator Lech Wasserberger, Senator Burns, and I think that's all. We're there in the downturns, and I was just going to share a couple things that I thought was pretty interesting. I got up early this morning and was thinking about it. You know, and history has a way of repeating itself, and if you look back in the early 80s and where we had a real boom going on in the early 80s, and it really busted in about 86 or 87, a lot of us thought it would last 2 or 3 years. It ended up lasting 8 or 10 years. And just some numbers back then, our assessed valuation in 81 was about $8 billion. We lost 25% of that in 4 or 5 years. Of course, most of that was oil. And the thing that's sort of interesting when you look about it, Wyoming has always had a three-legged stool. We've had commodity production, we've had permanent mineral trust fund income, and then we've had sales tax. We continue to do that today. The good news is really we've really diversified our economy in terms of commodities. Back in the 80s, oil was a huge, big percentage of that. I'm counting to 40 or 50% of our revenues for the commodity side. As we look at it today, it's split three ways between oil, coal, and gas. So we've done a great job of diversifying our commodity side of it. We've done a lot of good in our permanent mineral trust fund, thanks to your leadership and the conservative JAC to try to put money away for savings, not only in the permanent funds, but also in the LSRA. So as we look to the future for the next 4 years, and, you know, the shock of the oil price is real, it's significant, we're going to have to deal with it. I think we're in a lot better position to be able to take care of it now rather than when we had to deal with it in the late 80s and early 90s. And a lot of it is because we've taken that approach. So the reason we're number one or number two in the country is the best-run state in our nation. It's because of the way we look at our money and the way we prepare for the future. So, Governor, thanks to you for doing that. And I would echo what the co-chair has said about your budget. You've thrown a lot of things out there, and we look forward to your comments about them. And, Governor, if it's okay with you, as we move through this, we can do it two ways. I'll leave it up to you. We can ask questions as we go, or we can go ahead and ask the questions while you're talking about a subject. I'll leave that up to you, whatever you'd like to do.
Well, thank you, Chairman Bebout, Chairman Harshman, President. Look forward to this conversation and the continuing conversations we'll have throughout the session. To all the committee members, thank you for giving me this opportunity to present my budget. You know, it's a good time. Chairman Harshman, as you pointed out, as a starting point, I know it's not an ending point, but I think it's healthy to have the discussion. And Senator Bebout, I appreciate your historical perspective, and I think it's important for not only this committee and the legislature, but for the public to know that, you know, this state has been through hard times, and particularly when we were less diversified than we are now, relying on that three-legged stool so heavily on commodities. When those go down, it's tough. It's awful tough to try to figure out how to get out of that hole. And I went through that thought process when I prepared my budget. And so just a few thoughts, and Chairman Bebout, what I'd like to do is maybe just give some opening comments and then get into specifics, and then we just whatever's best for you and the committee in terms of asking questions, interrupt me at any time. So just a few introductory comments. When I made this budget, I did think about history, and I thought about predictability for not only for the legislature, but for the citizens of Wyoming and for local government. I thought about transparency, how we can do a better job saying to the public, this is what we have, and these are the decisions that we have made. You recall my first session in office, we talked about, you know, different ways to look at the budget. And I proposed looking at that 1% statutory money that goes into the permanent fund and diverting one half of that 1%, one third of it to go into savings, one third of it into roads, and one third of it in local government. That was rejected, but the concept I don't think is unique in terms of how historically the legislature has looked at the budget and how to build the state. We know we want to continue savings. We know we have infrastructure needs, and we know that we have opportunities for one-time projects, and how do we do that? And so while that was rejected, you know, the other proposal that I bounced around with all of you is, in order to provide transparency and predictability, the other thing we could look at as we look at the Rainy Day Fund and the way the Rainy Day Fund has grown exponentially, you know, we could build the Rainy Day Fund up to, you know, $3 billion or $3.5 billion, and rather than basing our budget upon predicted revenue, let's base it upon what we have in hand, in other words, cash on hand. So if you build up the Rainy Day to $3.5 billion, or whatever the appropriate amount was, we wouldn't base our spending upon what we're projecting. We're basing our spending upon actually what we have. That seems to be the most conservative and safest way to do it. And I'm not saying that's the proposal for today, but as we look at the Rainy Day Fund and the amount in the Rainy Day Fund, I think it's worthy of consideration in the future. What we don't want to do is we don't want to be what we see in Washington, D.C., where there's not only lack of transparency, there's a lack of money. And I do think, Senator Bebout, to your point, you know, Wyoming gets great recognition in a number of ways. And certainly our fiscal conservative nature has done that. Our savings has helped doing that. And I also say as a side note, you know, when I go out and meet one-on-one with individual companies, it is great to have a list in front of me that shows we're rated as the first or second best run state, that we're the second most business-friendly state, that our retirement funds are sound, and that we are sound in our general fund and in our spending, and that we have a AAA credit rating. That is a great way to help recruit companies, because one of the things companies want to know when they move to a state is not only what you are now, but what you will be. And if you go into a state that's carrying a large amount of debt and is lacking in terms of money, there's a concern that as soon as they move to your state, you're going to be raising taxes on them. So that has served us well. So when I was preparing this, I wanted to have this discussion. As you see my budget, a very small percentage, one half of 1% is for ongoing expenditures. The vast majority of it is for one-time expenditures. You know, and in the past we've had discussions, and appropriately so, of, you know, that some have classified two different groups in the legislature, savers and spenders. And that's a legitimate discussion, I suspect. But I will tell you, I also hear around the state, you know, that we are certainly more than a bank. We have a duty as government, and we want to avoid being hoarders versus builders. And I think the obligation for the state of Wyoming is to help build, help diversify our economy. And so some of the questions I ask myself is, you know, how do we continue to diversify our economy? What are those things will do that? Because you're right, Senator Bebout, commodity prices can go down, and we've seen that just in the last several months with regard to oil. But we also know that all this money that we have in savings is not under a mattress with a guaranteed rate of return of 8% or 10%. We're investing in companies outside of Wyoming. We're investing in countries outside the United States. The stock market can go up and down as well. So that's the other question, is how do we best manage our risk? We have to have savings, obviously, that are in the market. But what other things can we invest in that have inherent value, that if the stock market goes down 20 points tomorrow or goes down 20 points for a year's period of time, how do we still have those things that grow our economy and make us strong? Because the fact of the matter is, if we put, for an extreme example, everything in the bank, oil prices, coal prices, and everything crashes in 4 or 5 years, we're going to have a hard time building anything or diversifying our economy or keeping our young people here. So I wanted to make sure that as we looked at this, that we continue to have great savings, but we also continue to invest in those things that provide, in some ways, the best return on investment. That is infrastructure, our schools, those things that pay a return, and also those things that build Wyoming for our children and our grandchildren. So as we often do when we prepare our budget, we don't wait until this point, but a big moment in the preparation of the budget is the Craig Report. And as the October Craig Report came out, I think at least caused me pause, because as we've seen what sort of I viewed as the bottom line in the Craig Report, it showed us $4.4 million in the hole on the general fund. And the fact of the matter is, as we look at the Craig, just since fiscal year 2010, in 2010, the Craig missed projections by $349 million. In other words, there was $349 million than they projected. In fiscal year 11, they missed it by $357 million. In fiscal year 12, $158 million. In fiscal year 13, $302 million. And in fiscal year 14, $378 million. So each of those 5 years, Craig has missed the mark significantly on the low side. But that's not a criticism of Craig. It's just the nature of how they look at things, what they consider and what they don't consider. But as we looked at $4.4 million in the hole in the general fund, that number in building this supplemental budget is largely irrelevant, because what it is, it's not a lack of revenue, it's not a lack of available funds, it's the structure that we collectively have set up, where we have, in an attempt to be very conservative, put money in different coffee cans, and we've put so much away that now we see this $4.4 million deficit. In fact, in my time in office, I think it's been unprecedented savings. We've seen the rainy day fund more than double. We've seen the permanent fund grow by 55%. And so when you see $4.4 million in the hole, I think is important for all of us to know, and certainly for the public to know. That is not because Wyoming is not in financially good shape. It's because we have allocated the funds to go in different places at different times. So with that understanding, we have to ask the question, what money is available? And it's a little bit fluid at this point in time because we're expecting another Craig. We know that there's going to be some reversions. But in talking to leadership, the staff at LSO and Alex, who works with me, we believe that a comfortable number is around $220 to $240 million of money. And this is not money that we're going to project. This is money that we would not spend until we have. And so that's sort of the number we have batted around. All of us will wait to see what the January Craig is to make the final determinations on that. But before I go, Mr. Co-Chairman's, through my some of my specific recommendations, I do think it's a word of caution and note. If you look at the October Craig, they point out that in July 2014, oil prices, and, you know, depending on what index you look at, but this is, I think, a fair number, oil prices were about $107 a barrel. When the October Craig came out, they talked about at this time that oil prices were about $80 a barrel. And looking this morning at the WTI, they're around $57 a barrel. And I read an article last night that, well, about 3 days ago, I read an article that suggested they're going to go down to $50. Last night I read an article that said they're going to go down to $40. And just to give you the significance of that statement, at current volumes and with other assumptions, every $5 oil prices go down, it costs the state about $35 million, about $17.5 million for the general fund and about $17.5 million for schools. And while we have had some great revenue and still have some robust going-ons in terms of oil now, it's because there's a delay. In other words, this crash of oil has happened in a relatively short period of time. We haven't felt the full effects of it now, but certainly I think it's fair to anticipate when you talk about the break-even price of oil. It depends what formation you're in and which company you're in and your operations. But we do know that as it continues to go lower, that not only will we see less revenue because the price is lower, but we're also going to see less production. We'll be hit on both ends. And so I think as we prepare this budget collectively, and we think about the amount of money we have to spend, it is important to say, you know, we want to be very careful about spending into the future or making sure that we don't allocate dollars that we're not sure we're going to have. And so I believe that 220 and 240 is a very safe number, and I also know that we're going to see some additional numbers at the January Craig, at least from some reversions. So Senator Bebout, Senator Harshman, now I'll sort of get into specifics and – excuse me, Representative Harshman, Chairman Harshman, I meant to say. We will, so please, Chairman, you all interrupt me any time or anybody else as we go through this.
Thank you, Governor. Maybe it's a good point at this time. Mr. Co-Chair, do you have any questions on the Governor's opening statements or comments?
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, I think also, you know, this delayed effect and what it has on the school side also, not only the price and volumes, but then assessed valuation. And then local contributions go down and state guarantee goes up at a time. So it's really a triple whammy. It's how that delay is going to hit us. And so so we're all cautious and we're all watching, certainly. Appreciate your comments on that.
Anybody else? Any other members of the committee? Governor, the one thing I really think that you really nailed it is the one-time expenditures. And we've talked about that 220. I think that's a real number that you brought up. The thing about the oil and that $35 million, those are really ongoing revenues, most of those. So that will affect the ongoing expenditures of the state rather than one time. And that's the concern we've always had. You and I, we've had those discussions. And certainly one of the things you've done as governor is you know, it's interesting. We've gone through spend more money than we went through the three or four, what was it, Don, 4.2% cuts 2 years ago, whatever that was. I mean, it's been like a yo-yo, and we tried to level that out, and you've done that. So I'm really encouraged to know that you really recognize that, you know, the thing we got to be more concerned about, the one time is certainly something to discuss, but the ongoing revenue stream to support government as we now know it is a critical thing.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that is something we all have to recognize, is that, you know, any ongoing commitment, what we saw, you know, when we had to cut the budget 6%, and we cut our office 10%, you know, for the private sector, you know, they have to do that. But for government, you all reckon, you know, that's fresh in our memories. That was a difficult exercise. And we certainly hear after you make those cuts, not even at the time necessarily, but for a year or two after, the repercussions of that. And so when you get into putting more into ongoing expenditures and you have your base still heavily on commodity prices, then you get into those ups and downs, and then it could potentially leave us in a position where we have to say we have to cut another 5% or even 10%. I mean, that's not distant history. That happened with Governor Friedenthal towards the end of his second term, and it's happened with me as well. And it's not only the cuts themselves, it's the lack of predictability that causes, I think, so much chaos in the agencies and, more importantly, in the people that they serve. And so when I talked about, you know, how do we provide more predictability and how we provide more transparency, that's one of the things that's fairly attractive to me. And rather than projecting revenue, base our budget in the future upon revenue on hand. And we could get, certainly in short order, the rainy day fund to pick a number, $3 billion, $3.5 billion. And it would also be conservative in the sense that, you know, well, that's the number we spend. That's what we have, and that's we're on a cash basis. But we have, as you know, Senator Bebout, you know, we have fewer employees now than we started. We have relatively flattened out the budget from the previous decade, and that's not a criticism of the previous decade. There was a lot of needs that were being unmet. But we've flattened it out, and I think in doing that, we also do give ourselves opportunity for some of these one-time expenditures that are relevant not only in building our state and our infrastructure, but they're relevant in that it gives individual legislators and governors a chance to say yes or no to something as it goes along, rather than, you know, ongoing expenditures that were created 10 years ago. You know, I don't want to say we're not relevant in that discussion. We can make changes, but it's much more difficult. Whereas the one-time expenditures, I can say I want $10 million for a project. You all can say, no, we want $20 million for something else. And it's very current for every incoming legislature to make those types of decisions. And it's also, I think, valuable to the public because they get to say Chairman Harshman was for this or not, or Governor Meade was for this or not, versus us just saying we're just doing what was done 15 years ago. It gets to put priorities on where we are now. So
before you move on in too, Governor, one of the things, and I think you mentioned it, is the LSRA, and what is that number? And so as a member of the Senate and certainly the legislature, I look forward to working with you. And we've actually done some work on that. Our staff has did an analysis, and a lot of states are going through this, and certainly Alaska, that just saw, what, a $4 billion hit to their budget, have a huge fund. And a lot of, you know, there's a lot of work put into what is that number.
Right.
And what creates a rainy day? And so we look forward to, I don't think we're prepared, at least I'm not, to say what that number should be now. But I think during this session and certainly during the interim, we can come up with a good reason as to what that number should be. And I think, Don, we had all the way from the low side of $1.8 billion to the high side of $5.6 billion based on some pretty good information. So, Governor, we look forward to working with you on that. And I know Senator Perkins has looked a lot at that as well, because he's a chairman of the Select Committee on Investment. So I'm encouraged that you want to do that. We want to do that. We need a number. We need to support that number, then get to it.
Senator, I couldn't agree more. I think it's, you know, when I came into office, and this is at best third hand, I heard originally the number was going to be $500 million, and then it was going to be $800 million, and then it was going to be $1 billion. But I think we should figure out during this session, or at least in the interim, what is the appropriate number, and let's have our reasons for that. And then when is it rainy? And then when it's rainy, who uses the money? Is it exclusively for the state, or is it for state and local government? I think those are appropriate things, because we have been most fortunate in the savings that we have had. But I think we have to take a proactive look at that and say, what is the right number to be there, and then what are the parameters of its use, and what are the trigger mechanisms? So I appreciate that. So some specifics on the budget, and I may not hit all of them, but as we've talked about ongoing expenditures, two I'll start out with, and these were put in the budget pursuant to past legislation and also my belief in them. $4.7 million for nursing home rebasing, $1.6 million to meet our DD preschool maintenance of effort. In the Department of Family Services, this is not in legislation, but I'm proposing $1 million for a nonprofit initiative designed to train and place single mothers in skilled positions that allow them to support their family and hopefully get out of a generation or a cycle of poverty. I also have had the good fortune of traveling around the state and go to some of our youth crisis shelters, and it's been some period of time and since we've upped what we provide to these shelters, and as you all know, I'm sure, you know, these shelters provide a tremendous service for kids that are in trouble, that need help, and they also have great success in helping the kids. And the alternative to not having those youth crisis shelters is, you know, it's not a good alternative. So I think those youth crisis shelters serve an important purpose, and we need to continue to fund them. We are fortunate in the state, our Department of Corrections and the work that many employees of the Department of Corrections have done have been fantastic. We have one of the lowest recidivism rates, if not the lowest recidivism rate in the country. And one of the programs that they've worked on at the Department of Corrections is the Adult Community Corrections and the Split Sentencing Program. And with that, they have asked for some additional money as well. But again, total ongoing expenditures, Mr. Chairman's, is about $17 million, which is less than 0.5% of the standard general fund biennium. So on infrastructure requests, on one-time items, local governments. As you all know, I have done my best to support local governments because of my fundamental belief that's where jobs created, that's where people are work. And when I travel around and I meet with mayors and county commissioners and city councilmen, you know, infrastructure in particular is a big issue for them. And if we were going to talk about economic development and opportunities for economic development, the cornerstone of that or the building block is having good infrastructure. And as we see local governments, particularly counties, for example, they have only limited ways to increase their revenue. And frankly, one of the concerns I've heard from local government is this, is that you know, when the counties say, you know, we're going to have a special district, for example, in order to raise money, you know, mineral companies sometimes at least privately complain about that because they get told you need to pay more dollars for the county to have this. Well, the mineral companies come to me and say, we have been paying our fair share, and you, the state, have been collecting it, and you, the state, have been growing your savings at an exponential rate. And so that is why I continue to say we need to have robust funding for local government, because it's truly, in my mind, as we have done that these last 4 years, I think it has served the state well. It's served our local governments well. And so I'm asking for $25 million for local governments. I'm asking also along the same lines as we look at around needs around the state. As you recall, we passed the gas tax, the 10-cent gas tax. And not only does that provide additional revenue to the state, about $47 million, which was designed to maintain our road, it also has provided a continuing source of love letters that I get from people. So it's been a double benefit for me. But the fact of the matter is, in a rural state, in a big rural state like Wyoming, we do need to maintain our highways. That gas tax, as I see it, was to maintain our highways. But then we see areas, you know, around Douglas, Wyoming, or from Casper to Shoshone, we see these roads having increased traffic, and increased traffic due in part, if not large part, to increased mineral development. The highway from Wright, Wyoming to Douglas, we see not only the increased traffic, we see the results of increased accidents. Just over a one-month period, October 25th to November 25th this year, there was 31 crashes that occurred on Highway 59 between Douglas and Gillette. One of those was a fatality. Eight of those crashes resulted in 14 injuries. The Highway Patrol has stepped up their enforcement on that, but still we have a situation where we have a highway that is not designed for the amount of traffic. And so I've asked for additional money for that road, and I think it's Highway 2026 as well between Casper and Shoshone, to have some passing lanes, and would ask for this group's consideration of that, because if we want to continue to have robust mineral development and robust economic development, it seems to me we have to start with the question, are we providing opportunity for those companies to operate safely in our state? And so I think that is an important thing for us all to consider. Water development, as you know, we've been working on a water strategy in the state, and we're going to be rolling that out fairly shortly. But I think water and water development, conservation efforts, reclamation efforts with regard to water is one of the best things that we could do for the state. And so I've asked for water count two, which has gone down in the amount of money there, to be refilled. With regard to University of Wyoming, there's a number of requests from University of Wyoming. One is I'm pleased to report what the university is doing with regard to energy and energy-related projects has been going great. We've gotten some terrific matching funds. Companies that don't even work in the state of Wyoming have made significant contributions to the university because of the work that's being done there. So I've asked for $20 million in energy research matching funds. With the Literacy Center, I've asked for $2.5 million for Phase 2. For athletic competitiveness, I've asked for $4 million to be added to the $1 million last year. And I am been told that if we can arrange $20 million for Rochelle Athletic Center, that that can be matched for a total of $40 million. Also exciting, I believe, at the university is the science initiative. The fact is at the university, we've got some great professors, great faculty, who are doing some amazing things, but the facilities there are not where they need to be. The night before Thanksgiving this year, I had a chance to go up onto Gel Mountain and look at that observatory, and it was an incredible experience, cold but incredible. And I think about when that was built, I think it was, Chairman B, about 1978 or 1979, and at the time it was one of the top five or top ten observatories in the country. But time passes on. Time passes on with regard to projects like that and to the buildings that we have at the university. And I think the science initiative, as the task force looked at it, what they're looking at for phase one, they estimate to be about $100 million. For me, that is a good initiative. And the question before us is, if you all agree, then how do we go about funding that? And that's phase one. They have a phase two as well, but it's an important I think it's important not only for the university, but more importantly, it's important for the future of our state and the future of our kids. While I'm on the university, there was an article in the paper, I think it was this morning, about $1 million. Unfortunately, the authors of that, I don't think quite understood what we were doing on that request for $1 million for the University of Wyoming. So, Chairman, I will have just a little bit of time here to explain that. As you all recall, we worked through, the difficult questions on salary increases, not only for the university, but public employees. And last year when we did that, one of the things the state asked for and the legislature approved was $2 million available for retention-type extraordinary circumstances where we have, for example, somebody who's running an agency and for whatever reason, the salary structure provides $80,000. And to be competitive and have somebody good in that position, you have to be looking at, say, for example, $110,000. And so that $2 million was not to give everyone raises. It was for us to have the ability where you really need to make sure you retain somebody to have that available. And we have used that in the state on a few occasions where we needed to keep key people, but the salary that they were currently receiving was not up to the market and is considerably below market. So the $1 million is not meant to be a raise for all of the university. What the $1 million is that the request being granted, exact request the university asked for $1 million to have the same sort of opportunity if a key faculty member is just, for whatever reason, they're not where they need to be in the market. They're being heavily recruited by another university. It gives the university a chance to step in and say, listen, we recognize your work. We recognize what you mean to the students. We recognize what you mean in terms of grants to this university. If you brought in $300,000 grant last year and the year before, and we're quibbling over $5,000 or $10,000, it gives the university a chance to say, let's be smart about this. Let's go ahead and give them the extra money. So that is what the $1 million is for. It's not meant to be raises for overall faculty and staff at the university. Capital construction, we see we're teeing up, and I'm excited about it, building projects for our community colleges. I think one of the things, in addition to the university, we all ought to be excited about is our community colleges across the state. I think they do a fantastic job. They provide a great service to students all over the state. I'm very encouraged by the relationship building that has occurred just in my time in office between the University of Wyoming and the community colleges. I think they have a lot more collaboration. And as we see the university grow and flourish, we also want to see our community colleges in the same position. So I have recommended money pursuant to the recommendations of the State Building Commission for phase one or level one and level two studies. But ultimately, if those are funded, those projects will be built. I've talked about oil prices. I think it's important we keep in mind where that is. But as we move forward with this budget, Chairman, there is some things in that I did not profile, but I think are critically important for us to keep our mind on. Part of the reason I didn't profile it is because it's a little bit of a unique year where the Craig shows your $4 million in the hole, and I think all of us collectively had to have a discussion of the money that is available. And if you look at my profile, at the top of it, I try to suggest, you know, depending upon which coffee cans you look at, there is money available, and there's plenty of money available. But we want to be focused on those areas that are going to provide the most help to our state. So what I didn't recommend specific amounts for were the state facilities. You recall I recommended a large amount of money through SIPA for our state facilities. That is something we need to continue to do. We need to look at it again this year as we look at the dollars. We've got to finish the Gillette Madison project. We've got to continue to fund capital renovation. And for me, one of the issues that I think it's past due that we get funded is the Wildlife Trust. The Wildlife Trust, you know, the goal was to get it up to $200 million. It's a different type of savings. It's also a savings that if things really went poorly, we could tap into that savings. But it's not getting any cheaper, and it's just going to be, if not funded this year, it will be a continual request by me to get that funded. I think it is critical for agriculture. I think it's critical in our fights with the federal government on the Endangered Species Act, and I think it's important for the future of Wyoming for us to have that legacy for our kids and grandkids, and I think it's important for us to have that as I fight the federal government to say we're not just fighting, we're providing leadership in what we do, and that's a great way for us to provide leadership. So, Chairman, I will open it up for questions at this point.
Thank you, Governor. Appreciate that. Mr. Co-Chair?
Governor, again, appreciate your comments. And you know, we have a bill, just to comment on some of our non-permanent savings. This committee has a bill where we be a constitutional amendment to maybe change the way we invest some of these. You know, I think the Wildlife Trust Fund would be one of those right at the top of the list that the legislature, if that was all successful down the road, to consider that would change the, you know, the revenue off that account dramatically to help that. And so I think that's out there, too. So, you know, however that gets funded, that's one item I think we can move on to, you know, get more bang for our buck, more return. Appreciate all your recommendations. I think I was just trying to add this up. The University of Wyoming, and is it, the total is not counting the science initiative, but I think it was like 50-some million. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's
and
right. Yeah.
As I add that up, most of that, what is the number? Is it 50, 51 million is a match, I think.
Yeah.
So that'll be doubled to 100 million. And so appreciate that. There's been a lot of work going on at the university to match those funds. I know it's wildly successful out there with donors, and it's been something that we've really used to help grow the university. But So appreciate your work on that.
Chairman, I think it's well before I get in, I got into office, this body recognized the value of those matching programs. And just in terms of sound investments, you can't get better. You're 100%. And I appreciate that the university has been able to do that. And so when there's opportunities, for example, for the Rochelle Athletic Center, and we know we can double it, I think it's good. It's very exciting. To your first comment on, you know, the different savings that we have and how those monies are invested, I think that also goes along with my view that all the money that we have invested is at risk. And how much risk, somebody who knows that better than I would be able to tell us. But I do think we have to recognize that with quantitative easing, with the Fed's policy, and we've seen it before, where you wake up and we're in $100 million or $200 million below where we were before. And so that's why when I say, you know, how do we manage and reduce our risk as much as possible, we have to have savings. But we all have to also have to say Science Initiative, Rochelle Athletic Center, our community colleges, our roads, those have an investment value as well.
Anything else, Steve?
No.
Members of the committee, anybody have any questions? Governor, I got a couple. School CapCon, you know, it's been, I think we did some numbers, and over the past 8 or 10 years, we spent about $3 billion dollars on our K through 12 school capital construction, and primarily funded by coal lease bonus. And as I remember, Don, 2018, the coal lease bonus goes to zero, and we've got some funds set aside in there. What's your long-term strategy on school capital construction for K through 12 in, as relative to all the other needs out there in the state? Have you given that any thought?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. We have given that some thought, and as you know, currently we don't have any new coal leases coming in. I don't think that's a permanent situation, but until they happen, it's going to be hard to know when they'll happen or the amounts that they're going to be. And so certainly one of the things that just in schools generally, I've asked to raise the cap on the holding account from $475 million to $550 million, because that is cash that we can access versus once it gets into the corpus, we can't access it. But as we build the schools, if it's particularly on CapCon, I think it's there's two sides to that. One is we're building these buildings, and then two, there's increased costs associated with maintaining the buildings that goes hand in hand with that. And I think this is the time as we look at available cash, and you recall I left about $200 million on the table for the legislature last year, and you guys took about $100 million of that to address schools. I think that's something, Senator, we're going to have to continue to be proactive on until we start seeing those coal leases come through. I don't think it's a bad idea to tuck some more money away in anticipation that those costs are going to continue to go up. And we need to make sure we're not in the red a few years down the road because we don't have coal lease money.
The other thing, another thing too, Governor, is when you talk about your different proposals, to me, I think one of the things we should do, and it gets into the items you didn't profile, at least from my perspective, for me personally, those are number one ticket items. I think we should take care of what we committed to do previously. And so my question is, would you agree that we should take care of Gillette Madison, you know, the capital renovation and some of those commitments? We did some one-time money during the budget last time, you recall. We had the, I think we had the, in the Department of Corrections, we had one-year funding for part of that, and we did some in the Department of Health for the maintenance of effort on the K through or the preschool mm-hmm. DD kids. So how do you feel about if we start out, and that's got to be before we start anything else, we do that?
Chairman, I think those have to be done. And I wasn't trying to be, you know, partly because, again, the nature or the Craig as it came out and then seeing what the January profile are. I agree. We have to commit to those things. You know, particularly I think the Gillette Madison. I mean, if there was – we picked the number, is it $37 or $35 million for capital renovation. I mean, we could add to that or we could reduce it, but those are commitments we know we have. We've made them, and absolutely they should be funded.
You know, when you talk about the university, and it's $52.5 million that we could do for matching, and I think matching grants is a great way to do things. A couple of things in the science project, you know, there's a lot of merit to that, but it's $195 million. You have the state institutions, $113 million. We just talked about school CapCon. You know, there's just not enough money really to go around in some of those bigger projects. What's your thoughts? Is it something that we should start now and sort of build for the future with them, or just say no now to some that we just can't afford and look down the road to maybe we could do them? Have you given that any thought?
Well, specifically on the science initiative, you're correct. Phase one and phase two collectively is a little under $200 million. Phase one is about $100 million. And I think it's, you know, as we look at important projects in the state, whether it's that $100 million or it's whether that's CapCon at community colleges, I think that those are important. And I would say let's move forward on them now. And we're going to have a discussion if we do that, whether it's, you know, how you put the money away and what sort of time frame we put it away. This being a supplemental, we don't have the full picture that we will have going into the budget session, and especially with regard to oil, we'll have a better handle on that. But I think those are important initiatives, not only for the students and the faculty there, but I will tell you, Senator, you know, when I've gone down recruiting trips to Houston or Dallas to get money for engineering or for energy projects, it is important to these companies to see where they're going to invest their money, what you have going on at your university. They want to invest in cutting-edge programs at universities. And you recall when Halliburton invested in an energy project, one of the pieces of advice they gave all of us is, what you have at Wyoming is unique, and they don't just throw their money around. But what they said is, where you can match dollar for dollar, versus you put in $1 and demand $4 from private industry. This is the time to put your foot on the pedal, because now you see states like North Dakota watching what Wyoming's doing, and they're trying to do the same thing. But we have an advantage on universities like the Texas A&M. In terms of engineering, because they don't have the same sort of match capabilities that we do. So obviously we have to have the money, and obviously we have to make sure we have plenty of money to do that. But my view is when the money's available, this is time to put our foot on the throttle rather than the brake.
You know, Governor, I've appreciated the efforts you've made in the energy infrastructure and component that we put together with a footnote that we did last budget, footnote 321 or whatever the number was, and we've consolidated all that, and we're making great progress. And the leadership you brought to the table has been really well received, and I appreciate that. What I see in your message is that, other than talking about the School of Energy Resources, you really don't touch on that. Have you had a change of heart about the importance of that, or
No.
Is it just because, to me, you know, that diversification component and moving ahead on those particular items are critical for the state's future?
It's absolutely critical, and it was the omission was more because I assumed after a few pages you guys wouldn't be as fascinated with my message as I was, and so absolutely it's critical. And as I pointed out, it is noticed. It's not only noticed in the state, it's noticed around the country what we're doing by these energy companies, and that's why you see a company like Hess, who does zero business in this state, investing tens of million dollars at the University of Wyoming. That and the COO's alum, that doesn't hurt either.
Well, we've really been walking with you step for step on that particular issue, and I think that at least I will continue to do that. The one thing that's not in there, too, is we talk about international trade, and I think that Mr. President, Tony, Senator Ross led a delegation, and we made a lot of progress there. What's your feeling on us, State of Wyoming, continue to be involved in that? If we're going to do it, we got to do it right. If we're not going to do it, then we ought to just pull in our horns and go a different direction. But what's your thoughts?
You know, in 2013, we had the seventh largest increase in international trade of any state. And I love that. But I think it was more, I hate to say, more by good fortune than what my office was doing proactively. We have great occasions for consul generals, and as they often do, come into our office. We have occasion to travel. I think this is really a time when we double down on international trade, and you've talked about that often. That we have such great opportunity in international trade and international tourism, I think, but we do have to have a coordinated effort, and that's one of the things over the last year we've been working on in our office. Is we don't want the Department of Ag to just go to China and say, hey, we're in China. We don't want the legislature to just go to Taiwan and say, hey, we're Taiwan, and then me to go to South Korea and say, I'm in South Korea. We have to have a coordinated effort. Where is it we should go? Because I can tell you, when I went to Taiwan last year and then the follow-up trip by the legislature, that really maximizes our effort. And I think that's why we have to have sort of a coordinated approach. You know, where are we going to focus and why are we going to focus there? And if the Department of Ag needs to go there, tourism and the legislature and the governor's office, that repetitive opportunity, and including the opportunity to have people as similar states in Wyoming, such as Idaho, have, where they have actually hired staff in some of those countries that they want to target, whether it's for ag or trona or whatever it may be. You know, they pay a partial salary to a person who represents that state in another state that's not competing in that area. I think these are the things, Senator, that we should be looking at because we have such tremendous products, and not just, you know, raw products. When you see some of the manufacturing that's done in the state of Wyoming, you know, we have tremendous products, and we have companies in Wyoming that are already doing international trade, but we're not providing some of the help we could. So I think it's a great time to double down. What if we can agree on what the coordinated effort is, and make sure we're focused on a particular area for a particular reason?
Yeah, Governor, I appreciate that commitment. We've got members here that went on that trip. I know Representative Nicholas, Representative Greer, and Mr. President, and myself. I think that's all that were on that second trip you referenced. Any of you have any comments about that at all? Tony, you got anything you'd like to say, or anybody else?
Well, I think Governor's correct. I think that we need a coordinated effort, and I think at some point in time we're seriously going to – I'm not thinking that we need to open a trade office per se, but certainly boots on the ground that are there with a representative in some of these countries is an inevitable thing that I think we clearly have to explore and determine, because we have a prime opportunity, and I was highly impressed by the countries that we visited, and particularly with regards to our energy resources. They have nothing. They have nothing in the ground. They import everything. And we have to do a better job of redefining our message, because if global warming is the culprit, if they simply burn Wyoming coal, they will reduce their emissions by a third just by doing that, because the coal that they're burning is coming from Indonesia, and it looks like mud. So we have an opportunity to really open up and be a player in the Pacific Rim, and with your help, Governor, I think we'll do that.
Mr. President, Chairman, you know, when I went over there, I had the good fortune of meeting with the President of Taiwan, and some of the first words that were out of his mouth were, "You're the first Wyoming governor that's been here since Governor Sullivan." So they're paying attention, and I told them that we would try to be back, and that's why I think the legislature going over there was so important. But as I've made several of those trips and traveled, you know, a lot of times the first meeting is sort of an introduction and to build a relationship. When I was in Taiwan and met with their largest electrical producer, they wanted business that day. They literally handed me contracts to bring back to coal companies. I mean, they are ready to go. They don't just want coal. They, Mr. President, they want Wyoming coal. And as we battle on the West Coast in Oregon and Washington, British Columbia, the view is we can push to a degree, but having South Korea and Taiwan, great trading partners for the United States, also doing a pull is so critical, because, President, you're right, in Taiwan, highly populated, dense population, they don't have the option of putting up thousands of acres of solar or wind. And when they saw Fukushima and what happened there, whatever their views are on nuclear power, they point out with a nuclear plant relatively close to Taipei, whatever the reason, and they live in a place where there's volcanoes and bad weather, they've got it all. Whatever the reason, that something happens there, Taipei goes down, Taiwan goes down. So not only do they want coal, they want Wyoming coal, low sulfur coal. And so that relationship on having them help us help them in coal exports, I think, is critical for us.
Thank you, Governor. The other thing, and you mentioned it earlier, and you talked about volumes. And, you know, obviously our commodities are dependent upon price, but the real concern I've had, especially the last 2 or 3 years, are volumes. And it gets back to the overreach of the federal government and what they're doing to us just by the sheer nature of the beast. And you've taken a lead, you know, your office in trying to take this on, the EPA, the ESA, and all these different things. Is there anything the legislature can do to help better facilitate that? To me, that's one of the biggest issues facing us in the next 3 to 4 years, even long term, is being able to have the volumes. Prices go up, prices go down, but if you don't have rigs drilling or coal mines mining, you don't have the volumes, and so it really has a negative effect. Anything we can do better or help you with in terms of your battles you're taking on with the federal government overreach?
You know, as I said earlier, that when we have remind me, Senator, that I probably should have spoken to the Attorney General before I came up here.
35, 32?
We have got them busy. They're earning their keep at the Attorney General's office. And we need to be proactive on that. And the support of the legislature for the Attorney General's office is very important. But I also think it seems to me as a state, it's not enough to say to the federal government, we don't like your idea. What we have to say is, we don't like your idea, and here's a better way to go. And what the legislature did with the integrated test centers last year, what we're working on in terms of industrial parks, what we do with regard to helping out on beetle kill and the Black Hills, what we could do with a wildlife trust, we can say, listen, this is a better way, and by the way, we are doing it because, as I've said, you know, with states' rights comes states' responsibility, and we can show it's not just us not wanting things done. It's not us just not wanting improvements. It's, in fact, us doing those things. And the Integrated Test Center and things like that, the Wildlife Trust, what we've done with beetle kill, what the state has done and what this legislature has committed in terms of dollars and positions to address sage-grouse, we are recognized, particularly on the sage-grouse, as the leader in the country on that. And that's not only good for Wyoming, it's good for the West. And when that decision comes out, we can be fully satisfied that no state's done as much as Wyoming. No legislature has committed as much as the Wyoming legislature to that effort. And however it comes out, we will know that. But even more importantly, I think what you all have done with that commitment has put us in the best position possible to not have that burden listed.
And that all gets around to the big issue of public lands, and can the state of Wyoming do a better job of managing those lands rather than the federal government, which is an issue that you and I have talked about, and I think we need as a state to continue to discuss that. I'm not sure where that goes. I think we've got to be careful as we move ahead, but certainly we needed to be talking about us doing a better job of taking care of the resources in our state than those that really don't. They make decisions away from our state and they really don't realize the impact. The last thing I was going to go, and then maybe someone else might have some questions to go to, is the water. And, you know, you've taken an initiative to look at our water. I think that's right on. I mean, water could very well be the biggest issue we face in the next decade. You talked about specific projects and different ways to go. My question is, to me, one of the biggest issues is the Colorado River Compact. They've already over-appropriated that from 15 to 16 million CFS. And it continues to cause a lot of problems for me in terms of how they will do that, what they might do to us in terms of what they take. Have you given any thought to any of these compacts and what the state of Wyoming might do to better protect what's already ours and what should remain ours and stay ours?
Well, with regard to the Colorado River Compact, and I agree, that's certainly one that's the highest or one of the highest priorities, the Colorado River Compact. I think that the best thing we can do is make sure that compact is never broken. But as we see just the political reality, it's the downstream states, the lower basin states, that have the population, and ultimately, in a big fight, that population translates into political clout in Washington, D.C., just by numbers. And the law being what it is, I think one of the best things we could do, and what my water strategy in part is, how do we do a better job using the water, finding uses for the water, because we're sending a lot of water down that river that we are entitled to. And every year that goes by, in my mind, where we go just send the water down with no commitments, no word, I think we're at greater risk of somebody saying, we want that water. And we see Aaron Million from Colorado, his proposal that was made before I came into office, of piping water from there down across the state in Colorado. Now, we have and would continue to fight that with everything we have. But you have to say, he kind of gets an A for thinking about it in a way that we should be thinking about it, is what do we do with that water? I'm not talking about transbasin diversions. What I'm talking about is in that area of the state, when we think about the opportunities for industrial park, when we think about the opportunities for more ag, you know, this is why I think this water strategy and the projects we can do in the Fontanelle Dam, for example, are going to be so critical for our state. Because you know, water's funny. When there's plentiful, we don't think about it. But when water gets tight, we are rightfully reminded that of all our natural resources, it's the highest priority and the most valuable and the most precious.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Stubson, then I'll get you, Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, Governor, you mentioned briefly, and you have in your governor's letter, a reference to the Wyoming Industrial Parks and I think that's included in your off-profile portion. And I was just wanting you to comment maybe on the life cycle of those efforts a little bit. My sort of how I interpret your letter is it's something to be thinking of, but those demands on those monies probably wouldn't occur in this biennium. And so if you could just tell us a little bit more about that.
Representative Stubson, I think that's an accurate assessment. We've had a lot of discussion in our office on where that is and where it should go. We've talked about hiring a project manager for it, which may require some money, not big money. But I think in terms of is there an immediate need for $10 million or $20 million there now, I don't think that's where we are. We've had, over the course of the last 6 months, I've been hosting dinners at the governor's residence where we have brought in people from all over the country and all over the world to help advise us on where we should be with industrial parks, thoughts that we should be thinking about. We just had our last dinner last week. Senator Bebout, Senator Rothfuss, Senator Nicholas were there. So we're going forward. We're trying to get the ideas. But in terms of me saying we need X amount of money, I'm not prepared to do that. Having said that, I think there is great promise in that. And for us to build infrastructure of the magnitude that we would need for an industrial park the size of the Heartland, which is 530 kilometers, you know, it's going to be a big dollar amount. I don't know even if it's going to be that big, but if there was money available to start a savings account in that, I think that would be a good idea to start building that money up. It's not as immediate as some of the other things I mentioned, Representative.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Governor, appreciate your comments here this morning. A couple of kind of diverse topics. First one is on one of the proposals that have talked about, and this committee's talked about again, and Chairman Harshman brought that up. And so I'm wondering, in your capacity as the chairman of the State Loan and Investment Board, with respect to allowing or the proposal that we would allow certain other permanent mineral trust funds to be invested at least partially in equities. I'm just wondering, and as we look at that, you know, it used to be that we looked at our fixed income investments, and we thought that those were secure. And now as we look at, you know, a situation where we believe at some point we're going to be facing higher interest rate environments, that we've come to understand over the last several years that fixed income investments are no longer the safe harbor that we used to think that they were. And I'm just wondering if you've had the and I understand your comments about investing in Wyoming infrastructure, but as far as the portion of the funds that we're investing in for the future, long term. Have you guys had discussions about whether you would favor that type of proposal or not?
Senator, thanks for the question. Just in terms of, as you put it, you know, we're going to invest money, and we have a lot of money invested in how those monies are used. Let's just take the rainy day fund, for example, and Alex will correct me if I'm wrong in this, but I think the vast majority of that is bonds. And as we see, not yet, but I think there's a consensus that interest rates will raise, and because they're artificially being held down now. When those interest rates raise, you know, if you've got $2 billion in bonds, we're going to be in a very bad place. And so what I would say with regard to, for example, that savings account is that I think it is important to look at what other types of investments would be allowed in that. And always, obviously, with a word of caution, whatever you invest in, but to allow some flexibility for those to be invested, including into private equity. And private equity, as we've looked at that as a board the last 4 years, Joe Meyer, bless his soul, was always a little bit hesitant on that, and I was always pushing that a little bit. And the fact of the matter is, I think his caution was appropriate, because private equity, the first 2 years in his office, looked like, you know, that's where everybody wanted to be. And as investments happen, that's where everybody is now, and there's a lot of money that's going into that. The selection process on which ones you get into is a little more difficult. And even the advisors for the treasurer's office talk about, you know, private equity is still a good option, but it's not quite as hot, apparently, as it was a couple of years ago. But to your broader question, I do think we need to look at each account. And if we're limiting ourselves to a particular type of investment, particularly with the quantitative easing and what I think is sort of as an artificial environment, we ought to provide some more flexibility for those types, different types of investments.
Mr. Chairman, and then also I appreciate your comments about Wyoming leadership and coordination. I can tell you that several years ago that our legislature started an outreach to other legislators in the form of the EPSC, or the Energy Producing States Coalition. And I can tell you that that remains active in commenting on Waters of the United States redefinition. I know that your office has been in that. We've also, it's also been interesting where we find commonalities. That's up. We're up now have legislators from 17 different states involved in the as members of the Energy Producing States Coalition. And we find as we move forward and look at energy and energy challenges that we face in the future, we find some interesting commonalities that we didn't know we used to have before, like the Outer Continental Shelf drilling, that we find those people are now have a greater, much greater understanding of some of the issues we face with our federal partners and federal land managers. And so as we go forward, I'm hoping that we can do a better job of us coordinating with your office and our office, and your office coordinating with us as we comment. We're, you know, just in the last 90 days, we've commented on Waters of the United States, the Lease 193, which is the Chukchi, which has sovereign issues with respect to Arctic drilling, other issues on the Outer Continental Shelf, and that. And so, as also obviously sage grouse is not just a Wyoming issue, but a broader Western issue. So, we appreciate your efforts on that and your leadership, even in the Governors Association, and just would encourage us to all continue to cooperate as we move forward and working on those interests for our state.
Senator, I appreciate your thoughts, and I saw some of your comments that were circulated to us. I think it was on the Waters of the U.S. I think the or it may have been 111D. I can't remember which one it was. But I think it's we will look forward to any suggestions you may have on how we could do a better job of that in our office, because, you know, as I look at the landscape, whether it's Endangered Species Act or EPA, I think it's a mistake for us to think of ourselves in terms of an isolated state, because we have, in fact, been involved in lawsuits in other states as Wyoming when that state itself failed to recognize what the situation is, and including, you know, on the bighorn sheep, domestic sheep issue in Idaho. But they appreciate us doing it. But I think we have to be very active and collectively as governors and legislators in looking, even if it's in another state, depending upon what that ruling would be, if a federal judge rules it's going to affect us, and all you need to look at is grizzly bears, wolves, and sage-grouse to know that we can't just look to our doorstep and our judges. We have to look nationally at what's going on and have that level of cooperation amongst the states and the state legislators.
Anything else, Drew? Senator Hastert, you got a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, a comment was earlier, Governor, you mentioned that you talked about savers and spenders. I like to think of it as the savers and investors that like to invest in the state of Wyoming. That's kind of where I personally feel that some of the things I do. But anyway, on the landfills, I didn't know if I know we're going to be talking about landfill issues. We started to approach that topic last year, and there's going to be some tweaks around that. And I just wanted to get any of your thoughts on that before I go into the real easy question next.
Oh, thank you. I'll look forward to that.
We know what the easy question is.
Senator, when the discussion landfills started, you know, I think there was some debate about whether that's a local issue or a state issue. In my mind, it is a local issue, but the state has a big role in that because a lot of these landfills, they were done pursuant to the rules and regulations at the time. Everybody thought they were on the right track, and then we go back in particular to some of the small communities and say, you need to close this down, and by the way, you have to have 30 years of monitoring, and here's the expense. And so I think it is the state has an appropriate role in helping finance that. We do need some tweaks as we've tried to deploy some of this money, and in particular, you look at some of the smaller communities where you talk about gap accounting. You know, for a community, for example, like LaGrange, a community of that size, and then you talk about, you know, they have $1.5 million or whatever the number is on trying to do the right thing. And then also you say if you're going to get state money, you have to have an accounting system that works where you have a size, you can provide economies of scales, but in the smaller towns it doesn't. You know, those are some of the things. Because the idea, I think, by the legislature and certainly mine was, we have an issue we want to help. How do we best help those? And I think just by learning this last year, I think we had some perhaps unnecessary hurdles in the deployment of some of that money.
Let me guess what you want to ask now, Senator Hastert.
Well, I kind of was wondering if the roof would come down with the group we have upstairs, and it's been surprisingly quiet up there, but I wondered if, Governor, you could touch base a little bit on your thoughts on what's happening upstairs and on that, and the Department of Health looking at their what you guys have worked on over the interim on the expansion of Medicaid.
Yeah, well, first, just because, Chairman, this is JAC, I'll point out that there's not anything in my budget about that, and that is in part because as we looked at the expansion and looked at the financial impact of the state, Director Forslund believes that he can do it and be cost neutral. When I talk about Medicaid expansion, I think it's important to go back in history a little bit on it, starting with my first year in office, where I believed that that was a poor piece of legislation, and I thought it was otherwise unconstitutional. We challenged, joined other states in challenging the constitutionality. We all know where that ended up. And two State of the State addresses ago, I said, in effect, this is where we are. This is the law. So where are we going to go as a state? And when we've seen where I think the HHS and CMS has come from to where they are now, I believe that they have provided greater flexibility to the states for us to get some of the things that would be important to us. Where I stand with the ACA now is this. I still think it is a poor piece of legislation. I think they could have done a much better job in actually saying how we improve health care rather than who pays for what we have and just continue on. But the legislature last year said, unlike some previous years, go ahead and work on it, see what the best deal possible is. And starting early after last session, Director Forslund and my office and myself started this process, and the first conversation, Senator, was, you know, if we looked at this holistically, we are a rural state. If we had a magic wand and we could solve health care in Wyoming, what are some of the things we were going to do? And that got, as you know, so complex and so broad, we narrowed it down to just the ACA, and we looked at Healthy Indiana. I've had a lot of conversations with Governor Herbert in Utah and what they're trying to do. Arkansas, all these different states. I've written to HHS, had discussions with them about a block grant to the state of Wyoming, which was met with no enthusiasm, actually. And so this is looking at it. Director Forrest Lynn felt, and I believe, if we were going to do something under the ACA, this is the best opportunity for the state because we don't have to recreate the wheel in terms of Medicaid, in terms of a new system. We don't have to create an exchange. And we also have been able to put in the share plan provisions that require deductible premium payments, provide opportunities for work training. And those are things I'm not sure we would have gotten last year or certainly 2 years ago. And as we look at the state, I think we have to recognize the Hospital Association, and I know people are skeptical of this number, but it's a big number, and there is some number of uncompensated care every year of about $200 million. We recognize that there's, you know, the number changes a little bit, but let's, for purpose of the conversation, talk about 17,000 people in the state of Wyoming who are falling in the gap. And these aren't people sitting on the couch hoping for somebody to take care of them necessarily. What they are working people. A lot of them have their own private business who can't get health insurance. And if anything happens, not only do they not have health insurance and health coverage, they could likely lose their business. So we can hold our nose or however you look at it. But what I would say is this is the year we should say we're going to expand Medicaid, or the legislature is going to come up with an option that is better than that. But we need to move forward on this. And in particular, when we think about some of the small hospitals we have that are in danger of their margins are relatively small, and they're in danger of closing down, that gets my attention in a big way. Because as we think about economic development and quality of life for our citizens, if you take out, you know, even an example between Rock Springs and Rawlins, you have Wamsutter, and they have a health clinic there. You know, you take that out, and, you know, where do those people go in emergency? Where do they go for primary care? Where do they go for prenatal care? Where are those things? It's an economic development issue as well. And so I still say I don't like the ACA. I don't like how it was put on us. But this is the reality we're in. So what are we going to do about it? And I think this is a session for us to decide that very question. And I would also say that from my standpoint, I still am very skeptical about the federal government's ability to commit. That's why a trigger mechanism is important. Not in 6 months if they fail to pay, but on that day, that moment, they fail to pay, then the deal's done. The other opportunity I would suggest to you as we do that is because one of my criticisms of the ACA is it doesn't define and really give us an opportunity to say why do we have more expensive health care in the state of Wyoming than anywhere else in the country? How do we know why are those costs that way? And I think we could, if it was moved forward, to ask for the participation of the hospitals and the physicians, insurance companies, to help highlight, you know, why the costs are the way they are. Why is a knee surgery X amount in one part of the state and significantly more than another part of the state? So that we could start helping that system, which I think the ACA leaves out of, how are we spending the money and why are we spending it in the way that we are?
Karen.
Okay, we're not going to debate this so long. You got something else, Senator?
Well, no, just a couple of things on the, you know, and first of all, I just want to say, you know, Governor, that, you know, I appreciate your comments. I know we've had disagreements, and the fact that, but your willingness to look forward on this, this is just another representation of if Washington would look at the way things Wyoming do. And the way we do things, they would be a lot better off. And the fact that you may not agree with it, but looking for ways to enhance or improve it is a way that everybody in Congress, you know, if they would do that, we would have a lot better system. And just on the affordability portion of that, you know, that as you know, there's a provision in the ACA that requires 80% of from the insurance companies premiums to go to direct care. And when you, and I know that there was, and I don't have all the details on the level of reimbursement we have, but, you know, it is a fact that maybe it's shown that there is high health care costs in Wyoming, and trying to rein some of that in and trying to have more conversations about that in the future would be a good thing. But I just want to say thank you for continuing to look for ways of improvements for that. And I think Wyoming has done well for that.
Senator Meyer?
Just a couple things on the expansion of Medicaid, Governor. One of the things that I think bothered me last year when we were talking about the expansion was I think the attitude of the providers and the insurance companies when they were going to get hundreds of millions of dollars and that was necessarily going to offset the uncompensated care. To me, it just seemed incredible that the providers said that there was going to be no reduction in, you know, a $6 aspirin. There's going to be no reduction in all of these high medical costs, even though they're getting paid for their services now at, you know, because everybody's covered now, either Medicaid or insurance after that's implemented. And I would hope that you would instruct Director Forsland to try to actually track which he said he couldn't do, the savings that were associated with this. Because when we tried to pin him down on the millions of dollars, he said that we're going to come back in from the mental health districts and come back in from the different areas. He said, well, this is what I think it is. I know we can do it, but I can't track it. I would hope that you would impress upon him that it needs to be tracked and we need to do something about these extremely expensive ways that hospitals and providers happen to charge for their services. And I certainly pledge to work with you to do everything we can to limit the administrative burden that any of these programs have on our providers and our insurance companies.
Senator, it's a great point, and I was trying to make that a little bit with Senator Hassard, is if we were going to do this with the expansion, I think it also gives an opportunity to say, we want something in return. We want good information. We want to know where our money is going, how it's being spent. Because while the ACA, I think, as I said, is more of how you pay, we need to start looking at what we're providing and how we're providing it, and can we do it in a less costly fashion? Because this is something, there's few other areas that we have a budget on where we can say, you know what, why does a mile of highway cost this much? How could we trim that 10%? Or, you know, how do we lower our building costs? But with regard to health care, it's hard for us to do that because we don't understand as a state how come that we have a $10 aspirin to, or whatever your example was. And so I think if we were going to move forward with expansion, it's a good opportunity for us to put with that, what else do we want? What do we want on the flip side? And so I think your point is well made, and we certainly, to your instruction, will try to work with the Department of Health on that. But I think this body and the legislature as a whole has to be thinking, what do we, if we were going to do this, what do we want in terms of information? Because that's, when we have that, that's the point where we can start saying, here's where we could find some savings, and here's where we can find better opportunity to provide health care in a rural state.
Yeah, and Governor, you know, I've been very critical of that since the get-go, and I'm not convinced we ought to do it right now, but I will tell you that we've made the right decisions early on. If we'd have bought into this a year ago or 2 years ago, if you look at Arkansas and some of the other states, it's a disaster. So certainly Wyoming has made the right choice by saying no. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why we should continue to say no, and we'll have some good, healthy discussions on that. But I will tell you that I'm willing to listen more than I have been in the past to try to – maybe there's a way we can do this. Right now I'm not sure there is, but I'm sure willing to listen.
Well, thanks, Senator. I think it's – I mean, that's why I said whatever people's point of view is, I think this is what we should do is we need to give a yes or no on this and then why. The other thing, it's not, you know, I agree, had we done this right out of the box rather than fighting it, our positions on premiums and deductibles and workforce training, we wouldn't be where we are now. I wouldn't even have tried to ask for a block grant 3 years ago when I felt comfortable doing it this year. And that's not just us. It's other states that have been demanding that flexibility that's provided us a better position than we were. But, you know, the criticism that we are tone deaf to the needs of citizens, I think, is a little unfair, because this group, we tried Healthy Frontiers, and not inexpensive to do that. So it wasn't as if we had not tried anything. That was in, that was going on in 2010, looking at, how do we address the healthcare needs, and Healthy Frontiers was tried, and this body put quite a bit of money into it.
Okay, any other questions? But before we get to those that are not actually on the committee, anybody else? Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Make it brief. A follow-up to Representative Stubson's question. Governor, you've had the dinners. You've been meeting with legislative leadership. You've been meeting with the key individuals out there. You say now is not the time to start to budget for it. Do you think there's enough promise based on these initial meetings that we can start to look at something on the horizon for this, for something like a Heartland or a major industrial project?
Senator, if I said it that way, I didn't articulate it well. I think it's in terms of funding priorities on what I have in my budget, because I'm not ready to say we're going to start digging dirt between now and next session. I just was trying to suggest it's down there. We don't have firm enough plans. But if we remain committed to doing that, we know we're going to need a large amount of money, and it's certainly appropriate if we had the ability this time to start that savings account of some type for that part. I am, we have heard, Senator, from these groups concerns, for example, air travel is a concern for many of these people of how we get from point A to point B. We've had great suggestions of you need an anchor tenant, and you need an anchor tenant that, despite the price of oil or Trona, is going to be there through good times and bad times. We've had great suggestions on you need to have not one, but you need to have several. But what we know in certain parts of the state is we have water that we are not using that we want to use. We have rail. We have roads. We have number one in Trona, number one in coal, number two, I think now, one or two in helium. I mean, we have some great natural resources in the industrial park. Without exception, those people who come to the dinners, they recognize adding value being done through the proximity and the symbiotic relationship. Somebody who has a waste product, rather than treating his waste, is all of a sudden a feedstock for a company located in proximity. So I in no way wanted to suggest this isn't something we should pursue. I think it is, in fact, something very important to our state.
Follow-up. Dan, you okay? Any other? Representative Stubson, and we'll go to Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Governor, we obviously, inevitably, when we talk about budget, we end up talking a lot about the federal government. But I was just wondering if your office has had a chance to digest at all the action in the budget that came through this weekend on defunding the federal government's efforts to list sage-grouse, and what that what impact, if any, that has on the state. And, it's great, it gives us more time and that sort of thing, but it seems like if it's going to be listed, it may be listed because of a failure of other states to act. And one thing kind of swirling around in the back of my mind is, does that take the pressure off the Colorados and the other states to do anything and to kind of catch up with where we're at? So I just wanted to hear your quick thoughts on that.
Governor?
Representative, we started those discussions not yesterday, but the week before that, Sunday morning, when I started getting the calls about it. And what I want to point out for anybody that's listening is Wyoming's ready to go. We don't need a delay because we have done everything right, and we've been a leader in the country. And we don't want other states to delay, and I won't name a state, but if state A or B isn't doing what they say, they could drag all of us down. And so what my concern about that, the budget that they're looking at, is to the extent it says anybody should pull up, this is a time for everybody to have full steam ahead in terms of what they're doing in the individual states. I want that message clear. In terms of just saying you don't have money to list it, obviously that's the end goal. We don't want to list it, but the correlation between the language that's in the budget and what a judge may do is still a question in my mind how that all works out. But I think it should be full steam ahead by all the states. Certainly Wyoming would never want to give a message that we don't think we're ready to go. You know, if it was just Wyoming and they said the decision's going to be tomorrow, I would say go for it. We're ready. And I've had, when I was at the Western Governors, we had multiple meetings with the Director of Wildlife, Fish and Wildlife Service, with Interior Secretary Sally Jewell, and they recognize Wyoming's efforts, and they recognize that we are a leader. And so that is how that plays. We don't want the bird listed, but we certainly don't want any state to say this is the time for coasting. It's full steam ahead would be my message on that.
Done. Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to ask a question about the ACA. I'm going to ask a question about the ECA, and Governor, I'd like to get your feedback on the differences on the ECA from what the Joint Education Committee did and what this committee did, because maybe you're getting some of the same letters and emails I am, and I worry about some of these smaller school districts and their ability to give some of these kids in these smaller schools the opportunity to have some of the same opportunities the big schools have on courses that are going to be taught.
Representative, I had over this last year occasion to meet with I think it was five or six, the superintendents group, and then it grew from there. And what they were telling me, both from small schools and big schools, but in particular small schools that didn't have some of the flexibility because they had a much smaller budget, is just even on textbooks, you know, I think I've got this right in my memory. The normal rotation on getting new textbooks is 4 years, I think, and they're looking at 6 years or 7 years. That's a concern. It was really a concern to me when I heard that in order for some of the smaller schools, districts to adapt to where they are financially was that they were making decisions to cut particular types of classes. In particular, as you look, when Director Carando was at the Department of Education, he pointed out to me, as the in need for computer technology is increasing, we are in a nosedive in K-12 in our schools, and that's where some of these schools are cutting, is saying, you know, let's get rid of this. And so I supported the ECA last session, and I'm supportive of it this session as well. So that's my view.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Committee, anybody else have any? Governor, did you have anything else that you wanted to? I've got one last thing, but I'll let you go ahead if you've got something else.
Mr. Chairman, I've made two little notes. I can't read either one of them, so I guess that's...
Do you want me to help you read them? You never have said what I wanted you to say a lot of times anyway.
I need my wife here to tell me what I'm supposed to say, so...
The only thing I would add, and I talked earlier about history has a way of repeating itself, and it's just sort of interesting where our assessed valuation has gone up three times in the last 20 years or 25 years, but our spending has gone up about 10 times. And there's a lot of different dynamics that drive that, but that's one of the things I've always had concerns about, and you've worked hard to try to control the growth of government. But in the back of my mind, that's one of the things that I've always been concerned and had alarms about. So I just share that. And if there's anything else that the committee has, Representative, before we do that, okay, we're going to give the committee. Go ahead. No, Representative Escobar, go ahead. Okay, before we go to Representative Connolly, Mr. President, do you have anything you'd like to say or ask, or any of the senators?
Well, I do have one question, Governor, and that is, I know that we got this issue with state facilities in your opening comments.
Yeah.
And mentioned that we should continue to look forward to that. How you see us moving in that direction? Is it just a matter of saving money right now, or should we be doing something special besides this?
Well, I think, my recommendation last session through the SIPA was to put a lot of money into those. It was far short of what we would ultimately need. And that's another one as we get to January, Craig. I think we need to continue to put more money in there. The legislative group that's worked on that, I think, has done a very good job with their meetings and trying to see what is best for the state. But I think those facilities outside of the work of the legislative group, it's apparent to me that you know, this is, we have to put some more money into those facilities. And so I would say that is an area where we should continue to put money in and be eager to work with the committee and the legislature on, you know, which is the direction we're going. But my idea of putting money in there wasn't to close them down. It was to make them as efficient and as good as possible.
Yeah, I think we set aside $55 million between SIPA last year and SIPA coming up, and I think the report says there's $113 million that potentially is we may have to come up with, Governor.
We've got to put some more money in. Yeah, thanks, Chairman.
Okay. Bruce or Jeff, you guys got anything? Okay. Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
Governor, I appreciate your comments about the importance of workers and state workers in particular in your opening comments. And I'm curious if, kind of following up on Representative Esquivel's question regarding the ECA for K through 12 workers, if you can talk a little bit about kind of your vision regarding compensation, including pensions, for all state workers.
Well, Representative Connolly, I'll do my best to answer that regarding, I guess, the retirement system. I would say this is that last Wednesday or Thursday, I had the AARP town hall meeting, and I think they had 6,000 or 7,000 people on the phone. And the one thing I wanted to say on there, that I had the piece of paper in front of me, that showed Wyoming is rated as the best state to retire to. And despite having 6,000 people, that was the one thing I forgot to say. And in part, as you know, Representative, I think that the work the legislature has done on the retirement system and the pension, if I'm trying to answer your question, I think is, in my view, when we talk about the retirement money, you see states who get into trouble and then they change the law. In Wyoming, we view it not just as a legal obligation, but a moral obligation to the workers to make sure that is well funded. By the money the legislature has put in there and the contributions they have put in there, it's not quite what I asked for, but it has certainly, I think, been helpful. We see, despite the lowering the anticipated return on investment from 8% to 7.75%, and then on top of that, taking the expected ages of life expectancy, increasing that. So those two factors by themselves, you know, the 7.75% and then saying people are going to live long. Despite that, we see now in most of our retirement systems, we are, you know, 77-78%. The goal, of course, is you want to get beyond that, but we are recognized as having overall, and I think there's 9 different retirement plans overall, being very sound. We have not figured out Fireman's A, and I say we, meaning all of us. That is something that we tried to tackle last year, as you know, and we didn't get it done. And it's a difficult one. It's tough, but I think it's worthy of our consideration again this session to see if we can find a path forward. I mean, it's not going away, and we need to address that. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but I guess I want to, if you were talking about the pension plans and retirement, that's what I would say.
Go ahead for a follow-up.
Okay, yeah, Mr. Chairman. Governor, yes, that's part of my question. The other part of my question is about thinking about the operations and maintenance cost of these kind of one-time funding, that the reality is that it's not simply one-time funding, a new building, an X, Y, or Z, but the reality of what happens in that building and the people who work there and the services that are provided. And I'm curious about your vision for assuring that we have good wages, good benefits for kind of the work that happens in those buildings.
Yeah, well, just on the building itself, I mean, it's a good point. We have, you know, historically we've had some buildings that we've built that have been wonderful buildings, and then, you know, such and such group comes back and say, well, now you owe us more money because for operations maintenance. So it's, as we look at buildings, I think that's something, who's going to pay for it? Is it us or is it the owner of the building? And then what are those costs will be? In terms of, you know, the people who work in the building, which buildings are of little use if you don't have the people working in them. Again, if I'm understanding your question in terms of retirement, I mean, I think it's,
You know, we had raises last year at the university. We had raises for public employees. We've been able to do that partly because we have fewer public employees than when we started. But I think one question, if this is where you're headed, I think one question we all should ask ourselves are we committed to the Hay Plan still or not? And if not, what are we going to do? Because, you know, you've also heard discussions of increases in salaries based upon cost of inflation, and one of the senators talked to me about that. But I think in terms of we've increased salaries, and we know there's a point in the future where that again is going to be an issue. And should it be left to sort of the whims of the legislature and the governor at the time, or do we have a plan of how we're going to address that? Is it going to be market-based? Is the Hay does it? And if you're going to do that, you can't do it when it looks good for the state and not do it when it looks bad for the state. So those are discussions that, at least in my mind, it's not settled whether we are still with the Hay Plan or not.
Okay, Governor, we're going to try to wrap this up. I think that you're planning on some of your staff will go through your budget for you, and are you going to stick around or are you going to skedaddle on out of here? What's your schedule like this morning?
Mr. Chairman, if I have an opportunity to skedaddle, I'm going to skedaddle.
Okay. Let that be almost the last word. Matt, what I want to do is I've got a little thing here for you. Now.
Well, there's our funding.
I want you to understand this is your very, very friendly, conservative Joint Appropriations Committee, and for good, bad, or indifferent, this is the last time you and I will be in this kind of a situation where I'm sitting here and you're sitting there. So I've kind of put this together as a gift from, I haven't run it by all the other members. It's sort of what I put in here. And these dollar bills are not real. I think we probably violated the law by making copies of them, but Vicky did it. Governor, I didn't do it. And what's in here is, I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't open it right in here.
Well,
now,
nothing. I will not, with that warning. There's no way
But I will tell you, it comes from Rocky Mountain Sports in Riverton. Huh. So it's a real thing. It's not a gag gift. But, Governor, just thank you so much. And this is from us to you. And you can.
Oh, thank you.
I hate to say Merry Christmas, but Merry Christmas.
Mr. Chairman, if I could have the last word. You know, I think what the system that we have in Wyoming is fairly unique to have this process. I mean, I know they do it in some other states, but we can have 10 proposals by a governor that the JAC disagrees with all of them. But still, it's a good system to have this discussion. And as we go forward and look at opportunities on the rainy day and other accounts, you know, this type of meeting provides transparency. And I think we have greater opportunity for transparency even in the future on the budget, where the money comes from. Because still, after 4 years, I have to have somebody of Alex's qualifications sitting next to me because of the complexity of it. Senator, Chairman, appreciate your work very much. Senator Meyer, all of you, thank you for the work that you do. And I don't know that the public recognizes the difficult work this group has to do and the complexity of the work, but it's appreciated by me, and we appreciate, even when there's disagreements, the work you all do, so it's been a pleasure. President, Chairman, thank you. Thank all the committee members for giving me this opportunity to discuss the budget.
Thank you, Governor. We will start at 11:15 and get into the governor's budget. So go ahead and do what you got to do. We'll start at 11:15. Matt, just a second. I want to get a picture of you and I with that.
Okay.
Scary now.
There we go. Okay. Welcome. Carrie, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman. The governor's office has only a single supplemental budget request. That single supplemental budget request comes from the Homeland Security. It's for $297,684. It's a refill of the disaster contingency fund, which was used this year for ice jams in the Bighorn River from Moreland to Grable and for spring flooding in Albany and Carbon counties. And so Guy Cameron is here from Homeland Security if the committee would like to have more detail on that.
Well, sure. We're not going to let Guy, Senator Cameron, former Senator Cameron, skate like that. You know, we're not in a very good mood, by the way, Senator Cameron, so go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Bebout, Chairman Harshman, members of the Appropriations Committee. Thank you, and I do have to welcome back, special welcome back to now Senator here sitting to my right, Wassenberger, back to the legislature. So, Chairman Bebout, members of the committee, Chairman Harshman, we were literally we were skating in March of this last year, and We had a couple of events that took place that we provide support and assistance to local communities who have run out of capability at the local level when there is an emergency that is facing them. And in this past year, we had two instances of natural hazards, natural events that affected communities in Bighorn and Washakie County and then also in Albany and into Carbon County. Those events, one of those events was a five-day event that was up on the Bighorn River there in the Bighorn Basin around Grable and then into Washakie in Moreland, where we saw significant ice jams and the rivers started to swell to the extent that there was potential flooding concerns for those communities in the Bighorn Basin. And this happened in early March of this last year on the Bighorn and the Knowwood Rivers. So as the result of those concerns and that rise in those rivers in early March there in Washakie and Bighorn, we deployed state assets. We deployed approximately 57 guardsmen, and we were working to assist with the local emergency response in Washakie and Bighorn counties to be able to put in place a number of measures that would protect those communities, specifically sandbagging and putting in place levee systems should that river continue to rise and get out of its banks into communities. In addition to that, then, we rebounded from that particular event into spring flooding that occurred, which was a nine-day event in Carbon and Laramie County for the most part, specifically along Woods Landing in Albany County and then also in Saratoga and Carbon in Carbon County. We had those communities, again, that asked for assistance from the state. And in the instance of the nine-day spring flood that occurred in March and then into just the first week of June, we deployed about approximately 150 guardsmen that assisted in those particular those two counties to, again, support locals that were hard at work trying to protect their communities but have run out of capability and capacity where there was the request for assistance from the state. And we responded to that to be able to support their efforts, again, to protect their communities. In the instance of the ice jams, that broke down to about $114,000 out of the disaster contingency fund. And then the nine-day flood, spring flooding that took place, that was approximately $182,000. So those two events and the amount that the Chief of Staff Gray elaborated on, that is the request, Mr. Chairman, that we would like to fill that disaster contingency fund to its capacity, which is a $750,000 limit to prepare ourselves for the future and those incidents that the state faces. And it is an account that is there that is there to support those communities that aggressively try to address at the local level to the best of their abilities and have done so in every instance that I've been involved in. And yet there are capacities and capabilities that just run out, and they turn to the state and say, can you help us? And so that's when we engage and go into action. And so this account is to support services, equipment, and manpower to assist and support the local in that incident. Mr. Chairman, that is the summary. I'd be more than happy to try to address specific questions.
Can I give me those numbers again, what it costs for ice jam and then for the spring floods?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The total ice jam expenditures for a five-day event was $114,465.28. And the spring flood, the nine-day event, was $182,000.
What was that again?
That would have been in – the two counties would have been in Washakie and Bighorn County. And it would have been along both the Bighorn River and the Knowwood River. So the areas of concern for us were Grable and also into Manderson and Worland as well. And then as we turn to the spring flood, the two counties that we were mainly involved in were Albany County and Carbon County. So we were along Woods Landing. And then also most of our involvement was in Saratoga.
So that your spring floods were for those two areas, the Bighorn River and then down at the Platte, down at Saratoga, both.
That's correct.
What was that amount?
It was $182,629.08.
Okay. Committee questions? Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman and Director Cameron, that $750,000 amount, how much typically, for like example, last biennium, how did you exhaust that amount, or did you come even close to exhausting that amount?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, there is a balance in that account of about $450,000, and so we have not exhausted that historically year in and year out. It is specific to an emergency event that is usually through a declaration that will scale up from the local level to the state requesting assistance, and then that account is turned on. That answer your question, sir?
Yeah, I think that the last session there was $750 still in that, so that it all rolled forward. We haven't used it. It was all there before, right?
Mr. Chairman, so maybe, and this is a question I had asked Director Cameron just before we came in. So if the question is, so we had heavy flooding in 2011, and we use this account. But what it does is when you have a federal disaster declaration, then we could refill it through that matter. So it sort of backs up a less severe disaster than the federal. But we do use it, and we have used it more than this two events. We used it in 2011, probably used it completely, but we got reimbursed through our federal disaster declaration.
Yeah, I was going to ask that question too, Guy. It seems to me that if there's a flood and then the governor declares it a disaster and FEMA agrees, then the feds pay for it. If the governor doesn't or they disagree, then we're on the hook. Could you go into that a little bit more, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up, when there is a disaster declaration, it will happen in two forms. These events in 2014, they did not rise to the level of a presidential disaster declaration, which has a financial indicator for the state of Wyoming to have to meet among several criteria. But the financial criteria for the state of Wyoming is $1 million worth of public infrastructure damage. So as you look to these events, it did not rise to the level of consideration from FEMA for a presidential disaster declaration. So in that instance, it is an account that we can turn to from a state perspective to be able to assist. Should it be, though, a presidential disaster declaration, similar to what we experienced in history and of late in 2010 and 2011? 2010 was the flood in Lander, and really in late summer, as I recall from historical and then the other was in 2011, where it affected 15 counties and the Wind River Reservation. The federal government, through Governor Meade, who took the initiative on behalf of those communities to ask for a presidential disaster declaration in 2011, that rose to the level of the financial indicator that we had over $1 million. What happens then is then the federal government, if the president approves of that presidential disaster declaration and it meets the criteria, then the federal government will pay for 75% of that critical infrastructure is damaged, and then the local community or the county is responsible for that 25%. What has happened for that 25% in Wyoming's history is our governors, both in 2010, under the previous administration, supported it to address part of that from a state perspective. And then in 2011, Governor Meade stepped in and also supported local communities for part of that 25%.
Okay, further questions? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, two questions. One is, who exactly authorizes that $750,000, the spending of that? Is that a gubernatorial decision?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, the process for that ultimately comes to my office, Senator, but it is initiated historically through a disaster proclamation process. So that's how we gauge on whether we get into that account or not. Again, keep in mind that this account is to support, not totally offset a local community's investment in an event, but it's to support that effort. And so it will come through county commissioners, city councils that will say, we have an incident that has affected our community, and we would request assistance from the state. And then that can also rise up through the state, and then we tap into that account. Does that help?
Well, it doesn't completely answer it. Okay. Who at the state level authorizes the tapping of that account?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, so the bulk of these expenses come in reimbursement of the National Guard, and the governor has to call out the National Guard. And so the governor, in conjunction with Homeland Security and the National Guard, authorizes smoke jumpers and the National Guard, the kinds of things that are being expended. So while he doesn't authorize every expense, as the director said, those go over his desk, the fact that there's a declaration to create these expenses has to come out of the governor's office. So he is, in fact, has oversight of these expenditures.
Okay, and my other question is, Mr. Chairman, I guess it's a two-part question. How long has that $750 been there? And in other words, my question where I'm going is, has inflation eroded that at all? And I'm wondering about the $250,000 gap between the $750 and the million that makes it a federal, where you would qualify for federal aid. And would it make sense to enhance that fund up to $1 million?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I think so the experiences that we've had in the three experiences, which was sort of we obviously weren't in our positions in 2010 when there was the flood in Fremont County, but we were in the aftermath or the cleanup of that. Then we've had the flooding, the drought, and fire, and then the flooding. And so what I would tell you is if you're going to cross the bar on the $1 million, you're really going to cross the bar. And the governor does have B-11 authority for a large disaster to make that up. And so really this amount of money is probably appropriate, because if it's a big disaster, it's going to nowhere come near to it. And if it's a small one, if it's over a little or under a little, the governor can use his B-11 process to go ahead and make that right.
Mr. Chairman, that actually raises another question. One of the things I was thinking while Senator Cameron was making his presentation on this is, why hasn't the governor just B-11'd the money that we saved on fighting forest fires and moved it over into this account? Or is that not? And that's a question from naivete.
I was going to ask that same question. Go ahead, Carrie Jo.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I think, you know, the legislature has set up a number of accounts that are sort of insurance accounts or backstops for this kind of situation. And I think really after multiple discussions with different members of the legislature on the forest fire, you know, the forest fire has a contingency that can be used for some bark beetle, and it really was set aside for forest fires, which, as you remember, were devastating. And this is truly more of a flood. It's a contingency of disaster account, so certainly could be used for forest fires, but it sits as a separate account. So I would tell you, first off, we never even considered it. But second off, I think had we considered it, we would have thought that this account, which has been a longstanding account, is an important account to have for just this very kind of thing that happened, and that probably you wouldn't want to be using B-11 process, because we didn't run out of the account. We're just asking it to be refilled in the event of a future disaster.
Yeah, but the point is, I think if that should happen, we don't know if it will or not for floods this coming year, but if it does, you can. The governor can be 11. There's a whole different bunch of areas where you can do that. You've got the $1.5 million in FINERPA for sage-grouse that I quite frankly question that we didn't give too much money for that and where that money's being spent. So there's a lot of different ways he could do that if, in fact, if we did have an emergency that occurred, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, that is correct.
Any other questions that anyone has? Guy, I want to talk a little bit about Lander. And you and I have talked about that, and that flood occurred in 2010. And it qualified. The president had declared a disaster. It was and I think the amount of money was $3 or $4 million or some number. And you and I have communicated here in the last week about Lander still has not been reimbursed. And I know it's, you know, you've done your job. Just for the committee's sake, go through that. I mean, here we are 4 years later, and the community of Lander is still out $350,000 that's really owed to them by the government, federal government. And is there anything we can do to help facilitate you in collecting what's due us? I remember, you know, we happened with the forest fires, and remember we had, Carrie Jo, remember we had about $11 million that we owed them, but they wouldn't bill us, but we set it aside, and then they this and that and the other, and we thought about offsets, and we finally got the bill. We finally upheld our end of the obligation, but the feds were just so out of sync with it. Is there anything we can do to help, and are we about ready to give Lander their money, and what's the status of that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll get into a little broader discussion just by example of how these projects unfold, but specifically to Senator Bebout and to the city of Lander. As the result of the incident that took place in 2010, which from a state perspective was about a $4 million presidential disaster declaration for the flooding that took place in Lander in 2010, there were a number of public infrastructure that was damaged. The city of Lander's cost for the 2010 flood event was about $1.2 million. And the city of Lander today has been reimbursed approximately $717,000, just under $718,000. So there is a large project, and a large project in terms of public infrastructure, something that, and it's set. The methodology is set year in and year out for a disaster. But a large project is considered anything over $63,000 for the 2010 event. Anything under that is considered a small project. So as the result of the Lander event, the best way I can describe what happens with a pub, what we call a project worksheet from a preliminary damage assessment, and then it goes to a it goes to an assessment of whatever that infrastructure is, and then the federal government and the state agree upon what that cost of putting that damaged infrastructure back in place. It's kind of like these home improvement shows that you see on TV. And this really, Senator, gets to the really the ebb and flow of why these public assistance projects sometimes can go rather quickly, and oftentimes they can be longer in their journey. Historically, about 3 to 5 years is when you can expect to get through a disaster declaration for what they call reconciliation and closeout. But they're like a home improvement project that as you go into a remodel, as you watch those programs, I think about this often in the flood world that we experience. The devil is in the details once you you set that project worksheet up, and here's what that assumed price tag is. And then once you start breaking into the wall and look at that remodel, how you're going to fix it, then you determine that, oh, boy, I've got some foundation issues that were now exposed. I've got some electrical concerns that now I have to address because it is not up to code. And then what that does is it makes that project go back and forth for the ability to enhance or increase those costs and redo that project worksheet. What happens then, Senator, is it goes back between us as an intermediary for the subrecipient in Lander and work with the locals, and then it bounces to us and then back to the federal government for reconciliation. So
if you look at the $4 million and then you said 75-25, and so Lander's part was $1 million, but then you said they'd received $730,000. Did they get that from the state then?
Yes.
And so how was it appropriated? Was it through the contingency fund that they were given the $750,000 for their $1 million?
Yeah, there's an account set up to pay that federal portion and then be able to pay the state portion through accounts that are set up. Then what's final in that, the final pieces then that we are working through, for the small projects, there are 6 small projects still left in Lander in that, which is about $137,000 that'll be left on the table. Those 6 projects have to be netted. And the reason they're netted is a number of them, you can have cost underruns or you can have cost overruns. In this case, there are cost overruns, which the state of Wyoming is going back on behalf of Lander and to the federal government.
So they're 75%.
Yes.
So then Lander was out about $330,000, of which the feds are responsible for all of that because of the overruns, and the state has no obligation in that. It's strictly federal dollars in, correct?
Well, there will be it will still be a 75-25 proposition. So the
where's the 25% coming from?
Well, that 25% will come from the state because of the decision made in 2010 by Governor Friedenthal that the 25% would be taken care of by the state of Wyoming.
Out of the contingency fund, or where did it come from?
It will come from an accounts that I believe are set up internally within the budget division for that particular disaster.
Yeah, but it wasn't appropriated by the legislature, so it had to come from somewhere that was already appropriated. So it had to either come from the contingency funds or B-11.
Mr. Chairman, in 2010, there was a contingency fund in the governor's office, and it was a flood contingency fund that the legislature had set aside, and that was based on a commitment that specifically for the purpose of the normally a county would pick up the 25%, but Governor Friedenthal had agreed with the devastation that had occurred in Fremont County to pick up 100% of the county share.
Okay.
So I just want to clarify, because I think this is correct, and I thought I heard a misunderstanding. So that came out of a contingency fund in the governor's office. The state has paid to Lander all of their 25%. So Lander is out this $330,000 because they've actually done the work but the federal government has to reimburse them for the work that they've done. But Lander, at the end of the day, will be out $0 when the federal government, and I believe that the state has paid 100% of their 25% to Lander. Lander has a project going on with in need of some cash flow to get those done, and so the state has made Lander completely whole at this point in time. I should maybe should say Fremont County instead of Lander.
Go ahead. Guy, you got some other things to add?
Mr. Chairman, just to add what our agency is
looking, what are you up to?
Looking into to address some of these issues. We are currently under a interim administrator from FEMA who has just been reassigned back to his previous position. And we will be working with a new FEMA administrator that comes from a different FEMA region here in the near future. So we'll get to engage with that particular FEMA interim administrator. In addition to that, Senator, within our office, the staff right now that we have to address public infrastructure when there is a presidential disaster declaration is one person. And so we are looking at contracts right now to be able to have in place that can put some staff on board in future instances that can expedite that process and payments to the local level.
And real quick, like especially for the new members, just talk about how many people you have and what percent is taken care of under the FEMA, under federal funding within the governor's office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our staff are 25 for the Wyoming Office of Homeland Security, and our budget is just at about just under $24 million, and most of that, 85%, is covered by federal grants. So there is everyone in our agency in one way or another is affected by a federal grant. Depending on the grant, there is we operate at about five grants within our agency, and so everyone in our agency, part of their pay, is affected by a grant.
And the sequester didn't affect FEMA, as I recall, correct?
The latest sequestration?
The one last year.
No.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Guy, just, you know, last year you were here talking to us about school security. Big buzz, big issue. Now we've got a new report. So where are we at now? What's been your role in all that, and what's happened in the last year?
Mr. Chairman, a lot of good things, Mr. Chairman. We are partnered with really three other state agencies on behalf of school safety. And just a backdrop, how we kicked off school safety was the direction and leadership of Governor Meade to look at the current status a little over a year and a half ago of school safety across the state. Called my office and said, why don't you get a task force together, and I'd like to know about the current status of school safety. So get some professionals, multidisciplinary folks on board, and let's find out what the state of Wyoming looks like and make some recommendations. As we go forth, the legislature did a great job in recognizing those recommendations that came from that task force. So those four agencies, state agencies that are at work for school safety, are our office, the Department of Education, the School Facilities Department, and the Attorney General's Office. We just met here this last week in Jackson with the Joint Education Committee. And the entire package that we presented in recommendations was accepted for discussion purposes and introduction to this next legislative session, specifically to look at how we can what we call getting ahead of target, ahead of moving to target, because if there is an adversary that is looking at negatively affecting a school environment, trying to get ahead of target. If you can get ahead of target, you can make an impact. once you have somebody moving ahead of two target, somebody's going to get hurt. So we are looking at a tip line, which is a you'll hear at this session about safe to tell, which is more than what we're currently doing with a tip line within the Department of Education. It's a whole strategy that looks at getting ahead from the prevention side so we have positive outcomes and not tragedy. In addition to that, there are some initiatives for school resource officers. One that would ask for introduction to the recalibration process that will take place upon the adjournment of this legislation as a subject matter for recalibration for the long term as a tool for consideration as part of the package for school safety. And then an interim program for school resource officers that we hope could get jump started here shortly after the session. And so there were some recommendations that you'll see in those two specific areas. So a lot of good things are happening. And then, of course, the school facilities department is looking at the physical protection features.
Mr. Chairman, how about did any more consideration of arming teachers or employees, training?
Mr. Chairman, I can tell you what we learned as a result of our task force to date, and I'll share with you what is coming from the legislature as well, this next legislative recommendation. The highest recommendation that we heard from school districts through surveys out of 46 of the 48 districts in the governor's task force was the highest recommendation was for a school resource officer that was from the Wyoming Law Enforcement Academy post-certified. That's the highest recommendation that we received. Nowhere did we receive an alternative to security. What is coming this next session is the idea. It's thinking out of the box. And Senator Anderson brought this notion up, and it's in a recommendation for the legislature to consider this session. There are a lot of small districts, rural district schools that have unique settings. So they may be small in population with students. They may be time and distance, 40 minutes or greater from law enforcement. They may not have a school resource officer or even a local law enforcement officer in that community. So what about the thought of looking at and having a discussion with the legislature of a teacher that could go through the Wyoming Law Enforcement Academy and be dual-hatted, if you will, as a school resource officer? So that is a discussion that the legislature will have this session in, and it's the stage for that is to look at, I think, a unique environment that we have in our state and a lot of places, and does that particular recommendation work? That's something you'll get a chance to hear about.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Conley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Cramer, I want to go back to the $750,000 and the request for the $297,000. Has it been the historical tradition of this body to backfill every time that there's an expenditure made out of that contingency fund?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, I can only speak for my time here. I can tell you this would be the first time that it has been before this body to fill that can back up. Historically, this can was put in place. The Disaster Contingency Fund came in place in 2003. When we changed as a state through the legislature from WEMA, it was used to be WEMA, and then after 9/11, everything changed for this country and for the state of Wyoming. We became the Wyoming Office of Homeland Security, and with that, then. In the follow-up year, this disaster contingency fund has, I believe, been in place with that amount of money since. And I'm not aware of any time that it has not been refilled.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. Director Cameron, I'm curious if you can just give us historically how much money has been spent out of the fund each year for the past couple of years.
Go ahead.
I can probably just look at where we are currently, and then I'm probably going to have to do some homework for you, Representative Connolly, to look at where specifically we've been in the past. But as I mentioned today, the lion's share of those costs that came here in this last year for those two incidents have been in it's either been in us acquiring a service, a piece of equipment, or it's been putting the guard on deployment from Governor Meade to support local communities. So it's been that $114,000 for the ice jams, and then the $182,000 here and for the spring flooding. But it's in those categories. If you need further breakdown, I'd be more than happy to get it to you. But it's usually in services, equipment, or manpower.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Director Cameron, I would like to know what we spent 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and 4 years ago out of the fund.
Okay. Well,
yeah, and be sure and get it to all of us. Okay. Any other questions? Guy, one other thing, too, that I want to talk about. You know, there's obvious places in our state where we're going to have floods. And in Lander, the big flood was 63, and I remember it well. And then we had the one in 2010. There's been the big one in Saratoga, and I don't remember the year. The question I have in committee, you know, what's going on, just for your information, is the Corps of Engineers has come to the city of Lander and the county and said, okay, you do not have a flood mitigation plan. I'm not talking about putting money into the ground, but a plan. And they've offered the county commissioners in the city that they'll put up $500,000 worth of in-kind services. If we'll pay them another $500,000, then they will come up with a plan. And I've got a problem with that because I just don't – I think we all know what's going to – and, Bob, you're from Lander. I mean, when it floods, we kind of know where the damage is and what's going to happen. We can expect that. So why are we going to spend another $1 million on a flood plan when we ought to be spending money on mitigating the impact of what we know has already happened in the past? The question I have for Guy or for Kerry is, you know, other states, other communities in our state have this issue. What do we do about this in other communities? You know, have we done things? Has the state stepped in and helped that? Have we done anything relative to helping the Corps? I worry about, and Senator Perkins, you talked about WOTUS, and you can make an argument that the Corps of Engineers was right in the middle of that. WOTUS on the 404 permits and the 303 permits could be setting us up to try to somehow, based on what the plan says, say we have more control of your waters. So can you offer any advice on what we should do, A, about Lander, and B, about other communities that are going to have the same problem or already have it?
Mr. Chairman, as I responded to you about just my knowledge of the Lander study, this is a study that's been obviously in place for, I think, more than a decade, which was initiated by the Poposia Conservation District to look at long-term how we can better prepare ourselves against flood. And so that has certainly been an initiative that started out with funding from the National Resource Conservation Service. And then I believe they ran out of money and then were looking for another horse to ride, and it became the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, I believe, is what stepped in. And I think that was about a $960,000 study that then is split with the partners at the local level. As I responded to Senator Bebout, you know, there certainly is, and I think a good thing, Senator, is that the city of Lander and in Fremont County said, hey, what can we do to look at long-term a mitigation, really ultimately for mitigation? They're having to do some studying so that they can come up with some recommendations to be able to know which way to go forward. So in that respect, just from the knowledge I know, I would applaud the city of Lander in that regard, that they're looking at long-term, how can we get there? And It's a study, obviously, but and maybe it's going to be a study that takes some recommendations to make sure we're stepping right. In addition to that, I would just tell you as what other communities are doing, we have a number of mitigation projects that local communities compete for, and so there are a number of mitigation projects that are currently happening in the state as a result of the disasters that took place in Fremont County. It's Highway 26 that is dealing with properties that are on reservation lands, as well as critical infrastructure for bridges that are on Highway 26, and being able to have mitigation that is really going to offset future damage to landowners in that area. So there is a project that is currently underway, and that is to try to address future flooding on the big wind. Senator, there's a number of projects that are currently in place in Park, Campbell County, Laramie County, Teton County, Bighorn County. All are projects where communities are utilizing federal programs that they have to participate in on a percentage basis. Most of those are 75-25, and they compete for those, and they're either planning projects or they're actual hands-on construction projects that are, for example, bank stabilization projects where they can address future flooding from a mitigation standpoint. So there are a number of good projects that are in place. If there was a downfall that I would share with you that we would look to in the future, is these projects are ones, as I mentioned, that they have to pony up at the local level to meet that federal obligation. Usually it's a 75-25 proposition. There are some communities that don't have the wherewithal to make that 25%. If you look to other states, some other states do it, similar to Wyoming. That is not a proposition that the state pays into. So the locals would pay that percentage, that 25%. In other states, the state, from a mitigation standpoint, will step in and try to assist either in whole or in part from a mitigation standpoint.
Why is land or 50-50 instead of 75-25?
Senator,
the Corps of Engineers has said they're demanding 45 or 50% of it be paid by outside sources instead of 75-25, like you just mentioned.
It's probably the nature of the particular grant. I'm not familiar specifically to the nuances of the Army Corps of Engineers grant, but most of these other types of grants that I reference are a FEMA grant that is usually consistent with the 75-25 proposition.
So it's the same exact situation as Lander has. They're just doing it differently with FEMA, and it's 75-25. So I guess they need to find out why they didn't do that or what's available for them, shouldn't they?
Yes, and for Fremont County, for Highway 26, that would be a 75-25 proposition.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can I maybe just, sure. In addition to the grants that Guy talked about, which actually aren't Army Corps grants 100%, except for the Fremont County grant, so there is a reason, I think, to be somewhat cautious. I know that the Army Corps of Engineers has been in working with the town of Grable, who had this deep problem with the ice jams, and there's conditions that come along with the participation with the Army Corps of Engineers into the water. And I would have to look into it more deeply, but just to tell you that your concern is not unjustified. When we had the landslide between Star Valley and Jackson, the Army Corps of Engineers refused to let us go in and make those repairs or get anybody into the river to make those repairs. And so finally the governor actually had to call and say that we're going to go in without your permission and go all the way up to the head of that department in order to get permission to get in the river. And it comes with some high penalties, and so there is reason to be cautious.
Okay. Any other questions, committee? Anything else, Guy or Harry? Okay. Well, Senator Wasserberger, Senator-elect.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question on school safety. Guy, do you know how many schools we have in our state? individual elementaries and secondary schools?
Senator Mr. Chairman, Senator Wassenberger, I don't have the breakdown, but we're 350.
I thought it was 371.
Okay.
So
375.
And is the recommendation from the task force to have an SRO in every school?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, no. The recommendation is on an application basis. There are currently right now 43 school resource officers in 25 school districts. What we've heard out there with the outreach that we have made this these last 6 months since you last met with those legislative directives and have hired two staff to go out and make the rounds to work on school safety initiatives. The schools that currently have school resource officers would like more. For those that don't have, maybe financially, the ability to get a school resource officer and would like one, we're probably looking at a number around 82 is the number that I recall that what we heard from those that in outreach. But it would be an application process that is being recommended, and to have shared funding that everyone has skin in the game. And what does that mean? That means that if you want to apply, that you would have the state participate, that you'd have that school district participate, and that you would have the local law enforcement community participate, so that there is a shared funding model to also look at those school districts priority-wise that don't have an SRO, they're time and distance from help, and they're in a very rural setting. That they be considered as a high priority.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much. We are going to have lunch until 1 o'clock. Do we have our, what are we having today, barbecue? Let's go off live. Turn us off.